What kind of a hand have we been dealt as women today, and how can we best play it? It's a large question that's always lurking in the background, and since the answers aren't obvious, I find women's lives to be immediately suspenseful and interesting. Don't you? Wait a minute. Who am I? I'm Abigail L. Rosenthal, Professor of Philosophy Emerita at Brooklyn College of the City University of New York. And while my advice has always been not to take my advice, I do write a weekly blog I call Dear Abby, the Non-Advice Column. And so, dear listener, I invite you to pull up a chair at this virtual cafe table, no matter your gender, age, convictions, or style of life.
Living in history. That's a theme of mine, though it's easier to give the theme a name than to say exactly what it means. I can hone in on it by at least saying what it's not. If you claim that the world we sense, with its tables and chairs, human realms of manners, customs, beliefs, and memories, is unreal, then you're not living in history. Who makes such a claim, and where does she hang out? In the light-filled inner place where the soul and God merge. Inside idealistic monism, Advaita Vedanta, or any system where only the divine is real. How does she get there? By mantras, meditation, Kabbalistic practices, yoga. Nothing wrong with these practices, necessarily. But if you live in history, then you won't let them overrule your experience of life's hard edges. As the Jewish joke goes, if there's no self, whose arthritis is this? Another program for dodging life and history would be absurdism. When he's about to be executed, Socrates tells his mournful followers not to give in to misology, the hatred of reason, which he links to misanthropy, the hatred of man. Most arguments, he explains, are of middling value. Likewise, most people. Few are totally good or really bad. Impatience seekers suffer a few bad experiences and rush to the judgment that arguments are of no use, people of little or no worth, the whole experience of life a loser. Their disappointments get prematurely elevated into the absurdist credo, I believe there's nothing worth believing. Since absurdism is a fashionable view at the present time, many don't wait to be disillusioned at first hand. Instead, they piggyback on the disillusionment professed by well-known authors. It's disillusionment at second hand. In his last and most controversial work, Hope Now, Jean-Paul Sartre, who fathered much of the 20th century's despair à la mode, confessed that he personally had never been prone to despair. But it was in the air at the time, and if a serious writer, philosopher, didn't profess to suffer from it, he couldn't get a hearing. Now he tells us, of course, a guy that talented can turn on a dime when he tires of the intellectual chapeau hat he wore last year. But what about the rest of us? The ideologues are a different set of history dodgers. Among the discomforts of life are its uncertainties. As the song says, will I be happy? Will I be rich? Will I be sick? Will I be dead? Will I be paralyzed from the waist down from a car accident or from service in my country's military or as the victim of a stranger's rage or callousness unconnected with any wrong I personally did or found guilty of something I didn't know was illegal, or penalized for something that wasn't wrong? Who knows? In real history, we live in the half dark. The best war plans fall apart when the battle starts. The person who attaches herself to a rigidly fixed and finished belief system, like, say, fascism, communism, Freudianism, or whatever is the latest edition of collective certainty, solves the problem of history by sidestepping it. Of course, some of her experiences may fit neatly into the belief system, but some won't. The ones that don't fit will be forced into the system anyway, or else denied and erased from view. That's the difference between an ideology and an ordinary hypothesis. With an ideology, when the party line changes, the pages from the history book are scissored out. For the ideologue, it's a trade-off. Give up the fresh air of evidence from experience about what life is like, and give up corrigible hypotheses based on available data, but in return get the closure of airtight certainties. Since the ideologue is human, she can't completely swallow what she professes to believe so ardently. Dissenters who express the doubts she herself may feel secretly or unconsciously must be forbidden and suppressed. It's a great life if you don't weaken. What about religious people and the anti-religious? Do they live in history? Or do they too reject the life in real time? Can one live in history as an atheist or as a theist? Isn't either a case of going too far, going beyond the evidence? Isn't I don't know the only honest position? Almost all the positions I've surveyed here were espoused by me at one time or another. Each belief but the last, agnosticism, was refuted by some counterexample I came across that seemed to me to defeat the claim. I couldn't keep my mind sufficiently closed. At least not for very long. I don't know if this is a virtue or a flaw, but I have certainly held many views and also rejected many over time. What about agnosticism? Can anything defeat that? Isn't I don't know the one view immune to refutation? What's it like to be an agnostic? the agnostic does not know. That's what the term means. Gnosis is Greek for knowledge. An agnostic is one who lacks knowledge. What could be more honest, more humble than that? Well, let's take her off the blackboard where she's one item on a list of positions regarding knowledge and place her in real situations. What's she like? What's she saying and doing? She's saying, I don't know if there is or isn't a God. If there were one, how could I know whether it was Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, or other? And by the way, as long as we're canvassing the things I don't know, can I trust my senses, my memories? Is right different from wrong, or are these distinctions also purely subjective? Do right and wrong have no independent standing, since they vary from culture to culture? Is anything true or false, or are those lines also drawn just to conceal power shenanigans behind the scenes? I don't know and can't tell. Really, you don't know when you're sick. You don't know when you've been fired. You've no idea what that strand of gray hair could possibly be, or what to tell your hairstylist. You don't know when you've been stood up. You don't know when you're pregnant. Believe that, and I've got a bridge I can sell you. Okay, I get it. Don't get cute. Maybe we do know a thing or two. But about God? Whether there's a God? And if so, which God? How could we know that? Is God, too, an hypothesis? If so, what's the evidence? Or is God merely an inner certainty? If so, why should one brand of inner certainty be deemed more correct than another? Offhand, I'd say it's both. It's the hypothesis that hope is not hopeless. Adopting that hypothesis, the evidence is retrospective. You can look back on a life that includes hopeless situations, retrieved by holding on, praying for guidance, and getting the lifeline thrown against the probabilities. It's also an inner certainty, though in my experience that's not constant. I'm quite prone to anxiety, doubt, and sometimes near despair. With some people, faith in God drives all that bad stuff away. Maybe their faith is stronger or purer than mine, or it might be temperamental. I'm a bundle of shattered nerves and always will be. What's the inner certainty like when it comes? It's a sense of presence, authoritative guidance, clarity, and sure-footedness with regard to action. One feels empowered to do what one thinks right, sometimes against the odds. How can you tell if the God in whom you've placed your trust is the true God? If you find yourself cutting pages from history, then it's the wrong God.
Thanks so much, dear listener. If this added value to your life, I'd be happy if you subscribed. You can find me at www.abigailrosenthal.com. I've written a book called A Good Look at Evil, and if that's not too scary for you, you can buy it on Amazon. Another book is called Confessions of a Young Philosopher, and that's forthcoming soon with illustrations.